pleasure to have Ming Chong Huang speak to us about a pilot study for mild traumatic brain injury. Neuroimaging changes detected by MEG using low-intensity pulse-based cranial electrical stimulation. Ming Chong has a long history of support to study magnetoencephalography, and he has moved now into a pilot study of treatment, provocative, interesting, and we welcome his input.
Thank you, Ralph. And Ming Chong, your screen is up and you're ready to go.
Okay, great. Thank you, Dr. De Palma, for the invitation and for the nice introduction. And it's really a great pleasure for me and today to share some of the information we have for our VA research. And the title of my presentation is a pilot study, treatment study for mild traumatic brain injury, MAR-TBI. Here we're going to use MEG to detect the changes after our MAR-TBI subject goes through a low-intensity pulse-based transcranial electrical stimulation. And the topic I want to cover today, unless over here, so first we're going to give a quick introduction about MEG and the MEG slow wave imaging. We're focused on the delta wave, 1 to 4 hertz oscillation, and how do you use that one potentially as an imaging marker for detecting mild traumatic brain injury. And I gave a web seminar in February this year, so if you listen to my seminar then, the first few slides will be repeat. I'm sorry about that, but the setup and a nice flow for me to talk about something actually and the rest part of the topic over here. And I follow this MEG and imaging marker from MAR-TBI. I'm going to talk about potential heating mechanism associated with the delta wave, 1 to 4 hertz oscillation in the brain when subjects are weak. We're going to talk about transcranial electric stimulation, which is a key topic of this presentation, and the different models that people presented in the past for TES, and then focus on in more details of our recently published and the result and for a pilot study treating MAR-TBI using this low intensity pulse-based transcranial electrical stimulation, and how the MEG finding associate with the reduction of symptom score in this pilot study. So let's start with the MEG. So MEG is a non-invasive functional imaging technology, and with direct measurement of the magnetic field come from the neural current. So when neurons talk to each other, the sending neural current, those tiny current would produce very weak magnetic field we pick up with MEG. The MEG field, you know, on the penetrate deep in layer of head tissue with no distortion. That's why MEG, we not only have 1 millisecond temporal resolution, we also have 2 to 3 millimeter spatial accuracy, spatial resolution. But the MEG signal is extremely weak. To make the MEG signal measurable, we need two things. The first one is the detector has to be sensitive. And here shows a picture of the MEG superconducting quantum interference device sensor array, and have a sensitivity 10 to the minus 15th Tesla, which is the femto Tesla level, which allowed us to detect extremely weak MEG signal from the neuron. And this is squeeze based on these physical phenomena discovered by Brian Josephson, and the famous Josephson junction. And he published his paper when his graduate students, age 21, and won Nobel Prize in age 31. And for this squeeze to be functioning, we need to cool down the sensor into the liquid helium temperature with about 4 degree Kelvin. So here's the MEG scanner. The sensors are inside this helmet shape device. The vast majority of the scanner is helium drawer and with liquid helium in there. The second condition to measure MEG signal is we had to block the environment noise. It places the scanner inside this big box called a magnetic shielding room, and allow us to generate very quiet environment so we can pick up signal from the brain. Because MEG is so totally non-invasive, we can repeat the measurement over and over again. There's no risk to the brain tissue. We see, you know, young patient that's, you know, as young as a few months old, a newborn baby, to 90 years old patient with stroke. And to use MEG to making diagnosis of MAR-TBI, we need first generate a nominal healthy control database. Yes, paper published 2014 and provide comprehensive social magnitude images of the resting state and brain rhythm and for deeper frequency band. Here's a picture from a group of 41 healthy control subjects in the MNI brain atlas obtained from our MEG source imaging algorithm called FastVestal. In the first row is the famous alpha band, you know, the 8 to 12 hertz, around 10 hertz oscillation. You can see the generator of the alpha band signal mainly come from the back part of the head, from the visual cortex, primary and secondary visual cortices, from cuneus, precuneus cortex, and the parietal area, and the two hotspots over there, that are the hand, somatosensory and motor function area. And beta band is 15 to 30 hertz, higher frequency. The gamma band even higher, 30 to 90 hertz. The generator for gamma band quite different from alpha band. You can see there's less activity in the back part of the head, unlike alpha. But for gamma band, the dominant signal come from the prefrontal cortex. And the last show over here, we combine the delta, which is 1 to 4 hertz, and theta, which is 4 to 7 hertz together. In the case of MAR-TBI, we separate and delta band and theta band. So this study established a nominated control database, voxel by voxel, from a group of healthy control subjects. When we have a data from TBI patient, we can compare the resting state signal generation with a healthy control database, hopefully pick up those regions with abnormal signal. And we use this nominated database to study a group of patients with MAR-TBI. We know TBI, MAR-TBI in particular, are referred as an invisible injury because the conventional CTMRI, the sensitivity or positive finding rate is quite limited, showing the pie chart of few percent. The reason behind that is because the conventional CTMRI are mainly sensitive to the blood product in the brain. But in the case of MAR-TBI, the dominant injury mechanism can be diffuse axonal injury or some new chemical damages where the CTMRI are not sensitive to. And in the last many years, in Dr. Jeff Wine's lab and our laboratory, we use MEG to detect, we find out MEG actually can pick up an abnormal slow wave, mainly in the delta wave range, 1 to 4 hertz, sometimes go to theta band, 4 to 7 hertz. And those are potentially pathological signal come from patients with MAR-TBI. Here's an example of the abnormal resting state MEG slow wave we pick up in the gray matter. MEG is a functional imaging technology, signal come from gray matter neuron, and here's a 1 to 4 hertz delta wave, see a burst over here. Those, doing wakefulness, those 1 to 4 hertz delta wave are characteristics of the neurological injury in the brain. Can result from a white matter axonal injury or some neurochemical damage, for example, cholinergic blockage. But the MAR-TBI is not specific for the delta wave, not specific for TBI. Patient with stroke, brain tumor, epilepsy, or potentially candidate for generating abnormal slow wave. But in reality, based on structural imaging, we can rule out stroke and brain tumor. Based on medical history, we can rule out epilepsy. And then we can link in the slow wave generation with the TBI patient who suffer from blast or from motor vehicle accident a few weeks ago, still have ongoing symptoms. And this study was published in 2014 and focused on the sensitivity rate of MEG slow wave imaging from MAR-TBI. And the x-axis is a classified maximum z-score, so measurement of slow waves and power. And the x-axis, we have control subjects, MAR-TBI with blast, and non-blast MAR-TBI due to motor vehicle accidents, sport injury, and fall. And the striking thing about this plot is minimum overlap of slow wave generation between control and the two TBI group. And with a cutoff indicated by the solid line over here, none of the healthy control are above this level. And with this threshold, we achieve sensitivity in the plasma TBI group 86.1%. So we can detect MAR-TBI using this method in 86.1% and blast MAR-TBI group. For non-blast MAR-TBI, our sensitivity is also pretty high. We approach 83.3%. When we combine blast MAR-TBI with non-blast MAR-TBI, so for the overall MAR-TBI group, our sensitivity, our positive finding rate is approaching 85%. Because we have much higher, you know, sensitivity and using this technology, and we can actually localize the slow wave generation in each individual MAR-TBI patient. Here shows, you know, 10 MAR-TBI patient individually in this MNI free atlas space. You can see the slow wave generation can vary from patient to patient. You know, that's the challenging part of the MAR-TBI. The nature of injury is not going to generate homogeneous, you know, site of injury. Actually, it can change from subject to subject. But because we have about 85% sensitivity, we can localize the generator of a slow wave in this TBI subject, you know, one by one. But if you have enough subjects, you know, you can see the trend. You know, in this case, you can tell, you know, the vast majority of slow wave, even though individually that goes from location to location, but they tend to mainly come from the frontal area or the inferior temporal area. In this paper, we have about over 90 patients. You can see, and as a trend, there's you know, more likelihood slow wave generation from frontal area and the inferior temporal area, and indicate that those areas are particularly vulnerable for MAR-TBI. Also, find out energy slow wave in a source magnitude actually positively correlate with the patient's post-concussion symptoms. And slow wave generation positive correlate with personality change, trouble concentration, affected lability from the frontal area. And we see positive correlation between energy slow wave generation and visual problem from the fusiform gyri. And energy slow wave correlate with depression from the anterior cingulate cortex. So the summary of our MEG study, and so we can use MEG slow wave imaging potentially as an imaging marker for MAR-TBI. The MEG slow wave from the gray matter can result from the deaggregation due to either physical damage to the axon or some new chemical injury, for example, cholinergic blockage in the white matter. For MAR-TBI, our MEG slow wave imaging have pretty high sensitivity in the doesn't matter if we use regional of interest approach or the Voxelwide approach we see in the last few slides, we can achieve sensitivity about 85%. Also find MEG slow wave correlate with the patient's symptom scores. So now you can see the pie chart reverse. You know, goes from 5 to 10% sensitivity from CT MRI to something like 85% we use with MEG slow wave imaging. And now you may be wondering about what is slow wave doing in the brain. Okay, so we have been wondering this problem for many years, and we have been in the wrong track for quite a while. And because if you try to figure out, you know, the mechanism of slow wave generation, we can actually help us develop you know, treatment mechanism. For quite a while, we think the slow wave generation and doing wakefulness, it's just a negative consequences of neurological injury. If that's the case, we maybe try to develop, you know, treatment, try to cancel out the slow wave. We didn't go anywhere. Until recently, we find out we are in the wrong path. Actually, and we're wondering what is the possibility that slow wave generation in the brain can be a healing mechanism, meaning can be a good thing happening in the brain on the side of injury. How do we get it? Because, you know, we know the slow wave not only happening in patients with MAR-TBI and the stroke and the and other neurological disorders when patients are weak. Everybody, when they fall asleep, they have delta wave. We call it delta wave sleep. They're happening in non-REM stage 3 and 4. So recently there's some beautiful publications. I'm going to go through it in details. And start with the sleep research and the link the slow wave generation with metabolic cleaning process happening in the brain, and show some of the results. You know, the same mechanism can be applied to clean out some toxic chemical, for example, beta amyloid in the brain in both animal and human. So let's look at the first study by Xie and colleagues, published a paper in Science in 2013. And the study in this, the cleaning process that actually associated with delta wave generation. And here's the first experiment they did. And they opened the skull for these mice and placed cortical EEG and measure the EEG activity. And of course, when animal fall asleep, they have a huge increase in delta wave. The green bar shows compared with the awake stage as indication of delta wave sleep. And what they are measuring actually is the CSF tracer, the cerebrospinal fluid movement, how easy those CSF tracer during a week. When during a week, the CSF tracer can only confine a very limited space, show in orange. It's a weak stage. During a delta wave sleep, drastic, you know, and the extracellular space open up, so the CSF movement can go much deeper later. And show over here, during the wakefulness, limited space, the extracellular space increased drastically during the delta wave sleep. The same effect, basically, increasing the extracellular space or increase the CSF tracer movement can be achieved by applying anesthesia. In this case, they applied ketamine xylazine. So the ketamine xylazine can also increase, you know, drastically the delta wave generation. And meantime, goes from the CSF tracer during a wakeful, during a wake stage, the orange, to the red stage when applied KX. Again, the increase of the extracellular space from a week to apply for KX, huge increase associated with the delta wave generation. So the delta wave generation either during natural non-REM sleep or induced by KX, you know, a format of anesthesia, can increase the extracellular space drastically, as shown in this experiment. And then to move ahead, for second experiment, by inject TMA and then take a measurement of the residual TMA during a week or during the sleep. So this, you know, set us when a subject during a week, when they do natural sleep, that again, to delta wave sleep, huge increase delta wave, slow wave power. And in the wake stage, the extracellular space actually is quite small. You can see after and, you know, a while, we measure from a distance, they still have high residual of TMA. But that's not the case, you know, when they have delta wave sleep. In delta wave sleep, the clean-up process speed up dramatically. And you can see the open-up of the extra space, you know, the TMA goes, you know, deep in branches. When measure from same distance, there's much smaller residual left over for TMA. So again, and the delta wave sleep enhance the cleaning process. The same process can be achieved when applied KX. And in this case, after applied KX, also increased slow wave power and increased the speed of cleaning up a TMA. And you can see the rate increase, you know, dramatically, you know, using this KX anesthesia. What about the other other harmful chemicals? It's well known that beta amyloid is associated, you know, with a lot of neurological disorder, TBI, CTE, and early Alzheimer's disease. You know, so see, you know, this experiment done by this paper by Xie and colleagues, they inject beta amyloid in one part of the brain and measure how fast this the TMA, in this, I'm sorry, in this case, beta amyloid, are cleaned up from the system. In the wake stage, the cleanup process takes a longer time, but during the delta wave sleep, and cleanup speed up dramatically. Same thing when I apply, you know, on the KX. I show the curve of the, you know, on the beta amyloid during a week, take a longer time to be washed away from the system, but during the two curve, green and the brown, shows when they during the natural delta wave sleep, by applying KX, this cleanup process, you know, speed up dramatically. They repeat the experiment for another chemical, you know, inulin, same effect. during a week, and the cleanup speed is low during the delta wave, and sleep or applying KX, and those chemicals can be removed from the system at a much faster rate. What about a week? So, you know, and the, that's actually very interesting. And the, they achieve a similar effect. They go back to the measurement of CSR tracer and what animal actually are weak. And by applying and the, adrenergic inhibition, and basically by applying this NE, receptor antagonist. And as a result of that, they see a huge increase at delta wave power, and then the CSF tracer goes from very confined stage and a weak to something actually go much deeper. Again, huge increase in extracellular space from a weak to applying for this adrenergic inhibition, which associated with slow wave generation. So slow wave generation not only can open up the extra space during a week or applying for KX, but can also achieve the subject a week and by applying this adrenergic inhibition. And the second paper I want to talk about in a bit more details, and this paper by Waronska, and look at, you know, on the animal and this TBI. They're measuring beta amyloid and precursor protein. Here's the main findings in their study. They have six group of animals, and the three groups suffer from TBI. What they're measuring is the amyloid precursor protein, a measurement of the beta amyloid deposition from a cortical site and from subcortical hippocampus. And one group was TBI, and with no treatment, then the brain generated accumulation of the toxic beta amyloid from both the cortical side and from subcortical side. And another group with TBI. This group goes through in a sleep induction, a delta wave sleep. You can see in this group, there's a huge cleanup of the harmful beta amyloid in both the cortical side and subcortical side. The third group of TBI mice, it goes so-called sleep restriction. In this case, they try to touch the animal. The animal cannot follow sleep initially. And then when fall asleep, huge rebound of delta wave sleep, and that process also clean up the toxic beta amyloid for both the cortical and subcortical region. And the other three groups are sham group with no TBI, and their beta amyloid and concentration didn't change in the cortical or subcortical side. So for this example shows the delta wave sleep is a induced delta wave sleep or sleep restriction can help clean up the toxic chemical from the system from both the cortical and subcortical side. What about human? And actually, this is actually not a very fantastic study that just published this year. And by disruption, the slow wave or delta wave sleep is going to increase the harmful beta amyloid in the brain, in human brain. They actually measured that one in the CSF. Fantastic, you know, research. Here's the main findings over here. And the y-axis is the measurement of beta amyloid. And the x-axis is the measurement of reduction of delta wave power. So it's a little bit misleading because you see the x-axis going more negative. So they're measuring the delta wave decreases or measurement of the delta wave reduction. So more reduction of delta wave associated with higher concentration of the beta amyloid. If plot in a natural way, and basically you go to the right, that's, you know, the number going higher, the slope actually will be, you know, a negative slope. But they decided to, you know, plot this way. So bear in mind the excess, you know, the more to the right means the more decreases or the more reduction of delta wave power associated with increase of beta amyloid. Showing the title, the decrease of slow wave activity is associated with the increase of the harmful CSF beta amyloid. So we know the slow wave actually is a good thing and might indicate ongoing healing mechanism in the brain. So the summary in the metabolic cleaning process happening in the brain associated with slow wave generation can be due during this non-REM delta wave sleep. Delta wave sleep by, you know, anesthesia, for example, KX, can be also happening in the wake by applying in this adrenergic inhibition. That's the main findings from Schiff and colleagues. And second papers, the beta amyloid after TBI in mice can be effectively cleaned up from the system and during delta wave sleep induction or sleep modulation. In human, and the slow wave sleep disruption can increase in this harmful CSF fluid beta amyloid. So combining together, I think it's quite obvious, the slow wave actually is a good thing. And that indicates potentially healing mechanism and neural repairment associated with at least the clean-up process on the site injury. But we know, you know, and the direct applying and medicine with anesthesia and the adrenergic inhibition without any clinical monitoring can be quite risky, you know, and also this medicine can have a lot of side effects. So it's not a direct option for using those medicines of treating people with more TBI. So we asked the question, are there any alternative way potentially to potentiate slow wave generation and to speed up or enhance the cleaning or healing process on the side of injury? And so we think about it, the transcranial electrical stimulation. And here's, you know, and a diagram from the paper by Fotonami and Minucci, and published this year in a short diagram on the transcranial electric stimulation. One format of that uses DC current called the TDCS. And in this case, you use heavy duty DC battery and connect one part of the brain with M node with positive voltage, another part of the brain with cathode with negative voltage. And actually, there's more than one format of the TES. We can talk about a TDCS, the precise shot. And in that case, this positive potential applied to the anode and the negative potential applied to the cathode. And we also can talk about, you know, this TACS, use the AC current show over here, the alternate current. And another format is TRNS, random noise stimulation, which just deliver white noise to the brain. So exactly how does a different type of transcranial electric stimulation work? It's not quite clear yet. But people actually, you know, and this paper, you know, by Paulus, have very nice summary of different traditional models going with TDCS, ACS, TRNS. They argue as the end node, the brain area under the end node for TDCS, TRNS, they increase the neural excitability, might consequentially enhance the behavioral performance. So that the brain tissue under the end node getting smarter, okay? But what about the other hemisphere? You can apply the cathode. The cathode actually decreased their neural acceptability, subsequently worsens the behavior performance. So the other part of brain get dumber. Okay. And the ACS basically increased the neural acceptability via the instrument of desired neural firing frequency that actually match your AC current. But recently, there are people point out this kind of model are overly simplistic. The sliding scale, you know, model did not always explain the result people find in neurological and behavioral measures. You can look at more details in this paper over here. So now this year, you know, they have some advanced model to explain those findings with behind this TES. I cannot go through those details behind those models, but you can read this paper, a very nice paper, you know, unless this model to talk about, you know, can be stimulus-dependent model, activity-dependent model, network activity-dependent model, the excitation-inhibition balance model, and the zero-sum model. The one actually stand out of these new models are the one I'm going to talk about today, the stochastic resonance model, the SR model. In this case, they assume the brain have a lot of endogenous oscillation. The hidden oscillator already exists in the brain. But in a normal condition, they're either too weak or the oscillation lasts too long. But we can boost them those oscillations by inject some noise or electric input or magnetic input, and to actually, you know, and through different type of transcranial electric stimulation. And to do that, these stimuli need to cover a wide spectrum of frequency. So what kind of, you know, and the stimuli cover a wide spectrum of frequency? Well, we know, and pulses. The pulses, if you do a fast Fourier transform, that cover a wide range of spectrum, all the different frequencies. Here's the one, actually, we used in our study, the IASIS, which is low-intensity pulse-based transcranial electric stimulation. The pulse only lasts a few milliseconds, with underlying each pulse, the high-frequency carrier, and the kilohertz range. And the pulse will deliver in a fashion of train, and the repetition rate of the train is, in this case, 3.6 hertz. That's in line with the delta wave, 1 to 4 hertz. So, and we're going to see, you know, how this ISS low-frequency pulses can actually change the brain function. In this case, we performed the research in healthy control. And in this case, and the baseline, this healthy control don't have any abnormal delta wave. After one session of this ISS treatment, and right after the treatment, we measured the MEG. You can see this increase of the delta wave potentially actually, you know, potentiate by this ISS pulses. They're from this different brain area. Those areas are not random. They're part of the typical sleep network. Okay. So this one shows actually the ISS pulses can potentially bring up this hidden oscillator from the brain. And if just one treatment, the effect didn't last forever. So after 96 hours treatment, you know, abnormal slow wave is gone, and this signal go back to baseline. But this study shows actually by potentiate and this and the slow wave, I can bring up this the hidden generator. So the idea is, you know, if we have applied this ISS to a patient with TBI, the overall goal is reduce the delta wave. But to do that, we're gonna, you know, through the ISS and by potentiate slow wave generation, hopefully speeding up the cleaning process. So take us quite a while to figure out, you know, the logic behind that. And, you know, the overall goal is try to bring down the slow wave. But to do that, you need actually doing the treatment potentiate slow wave to speed up the healing process. So here's the findings we have our study and just published this year. And in patient, you know, six patient was MAR TBI. In this case, the top row are the baseline measures. And when we can see, you know, all the six patients have baseline abnormal slow wave. So when go through 12 sessions of ISS treatment, remember from the previous slide, during each treatment, we enhance, potentiate the slow wave, speeding up the cleaning process. And after the finished 6 weeks treatment, we have a follow-up MEG. You can see huge decrease in the abnormal slow wave in this six patient with MAR TBI. Patient number five, you know, and as outlier, after the treatment, some areas show reduced slow wave, but this area actually show enhancement and increased slow wave. But this is the only subject who only finished 4 out of the 12 session of treatment, so he didn't finish the entire treatment. So his improvement is marginal. What happened in their symptom score? So this table shows the change in the post-concussion symptoms in those patients. And the sixth patient over here. And the first column shows the River Mead post-concussion symptom questionnaire. And then we show the symptoms were changed before ISS treatment and after ISS treatment, subject by subject. Overall, you can see the overall symptom score reduced pre and post reduction of symptom score. And subject number five, which didn't finish the entire treatment, only showed marginal improvement in symptom score of 51-45. But all the others showed huge improvement as a reduction of symptom score. Also highlight one of the symptoms over here, sleep disturbance, pre and post, big reduction pre and post. For this patient, didn't show that much improvement. He didn't finish the treatment. For this one, subject number 6, improvement was 3, which is in the pre-measurement to 1. So, if we plot those overall river meat PCS score, pre and post, you can see the ISS treatment actually reduced the PCS score in many cases over 50%. Subject number 5, who didn't finish the treatment, and his improvement is marginal. The second diagram shows the total of normal MG slow wave measurements before the treatment and after treatment. We see a huge reduction of MG slow wave as a result of the ISS treatment. And again, subject number 5, the reduction of slow wave is marginal. And when you plot the reduction of MG slow wave as function of the reduction of PCS score, they get this nice positive correlation. Namely, reduction of slow wave on MEG measures positive correlate with the reduction of the PCS score. And I like to go through some of the cases in more details. And this is actually patient number 1, and he's a Marine who experienced blastomar TBI. And so during the treatment, he reported his symptoms, reduced dramatically, and from severe to no problem or mild. His overall symptom score goes from going down from 46 to 20 to 25, reduction of 45.7%. And there's a slight finding, actually very interesting finding, goes with him. He's a heavy tobacco user. Before the ISIS treatment, he chewed tobacco, he used the high dosage of the nicotine patch he got from online. But he claimed after treatment, he had no desire for tobacco. He claimed as a beneficial result of the ISIS treatment. After 6 months, we have follow-up, and his treatment effects still there, and he also had no desire using nicotine. So potentially, this is an example, in the treating, that the patient with TBI, we can not only actually reduce his symptom score, but the side benefit, the reduction of his addiction to nicotine. And that's very interesting findings. And one, we try to, get more evidence, see whether ISA would be helpful for treating, the patient's nicotine addiction. For the MEG-wise, we see a reduction of MEG slow wave, overall reduction of 68.6%. In the baseline, we see the MEG slow wave come from the deepened area, the frontal pole, and posterior cingulate cortex, PCC, insular cortex, and hippocampus. We know the insular and the PCC are part of the pain network. Potentially, that explains his symptom headache. And we also know he had, a memory issue. And so potentially the slow wave, it has a hippocampus that consistent with the, and his symptoms in his memory issue. Let's go back to the slide. You can see carefully the MEG findings. So again, this patient, number 1, PCC, slow wave, and the insula, and the hippocampus, and the baseline, and from the pole. After 6 weeks treatment, 12 session ISS, huge reduction slow wave in PCC, the insular cortex, frontal pole, and the memory network. So nice consistency between slow wave reduction and his symptom score. And then let's talk about the second patient. And this patient actually, she was experienced, her car was rear-ended in a multi-vehicle accident. She had lost consciousness for quite a while. And his original symptom goes from moderate to severe. But halfway after the ISS treatment, she reported the reduction of symptom in stuttering, anxiety, headache, less visual issue, and the auditory, you know, overstimulation. One of the major complaints about her is photophobia. I remember very clearly the first time when my associate Anna Marie and I saw her the first time in my office. In the closed shade and dimmed down the light because she was complaining about it's too bright in our office. It triggered headache. And after treatment, we see huge reduction in symptoms, or about 50%, goes from overall score 54 to 27. One of the major improvements is his photophobia. She said after treatment, she can just wear sunglasses in the very sunny California afternoon and help in the yard sale for her church. Before the treatment, it's not even possible. So, you know, and she was so happy about, you know, the reduction of her symptom for photophobia. So his overall MEG C-score also reduced 45.1%. And specifically, in the baseline, we see his slow degeneration from anterior cingulate and occipital area. And let's go back to the MEG findings. So this is patient's MEG slow wave measurement baseline before the ISS treatment. You can see huge slow wave from cingulate cortex from the deepened occipital area. That might explain her complaint about headache and the photophobia. And those symptoms, those actually slow wave reduced drastically after the 6 weeks 12 session ISS treatment, and the change of the, you know, slow wave in the occipital area nicely consistent with her reduction of photophobia symptoms and headache, you know, associated with ACC. Again, you know, a nice story of consistency between the MEG slow wave reduction and the symptom scores.
Dr. Huang?
Yes.
Hi, I'm so sorry to interrupt. We do want to leave ample time for Q&A. Perhaps we can ask some of the attendees to review the particular cases a little bit on their own afterwards.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. So let me. Let me go. You're welcome to read, you know, the more details about this patient. You know, this, you know, summarized in detail in our paper. You can get from online. I'm gonna skip the details of those, you know, those individual information of the patient for more time for our question section. Patient number 5, he didn't finish the entire treatment. So his improvement of the symptoms very marginal, 11.8%. The reduction of MEG slow wave also marginal, 12%. So we, doing our new study, which we're going to start January 1st, we have to make sure our patient finished the 6 week treatment. So a summary to this pilot study. So in this case, we use MEG to measure the reduction of the slow wave when we treat a patient with the ISS low intensity pulse based transcranial electric stimulation. So the ISS treatment actually potentiate slow wave generation during the treatment initially. And eventually, when I finish the entire treatment course, I bring down the abnormal slow wave, in many cases, to the baseline after the subject finished the 12 session 6 week treatment. And we also showed the ISS treatment also reduced the total TBI symptom scores. And we see this reduction of the TBI symptom score positive correlate with the reduction of MEG slow wave generation. And you may ask, how does subject feel? Actually, they feel actually 5 out of 6. Clinically, the subject reported they feel substantially better. And the one feel the same as the subject who actually quit the treatment in the middle. So this patient had feel about the same. So and then I'm going to thank the VA for the strong support and for the last many years and through my review grants, and some research also supported by DOD, by National Football League, and also by Brain Trauma Foundation. And particularly, I must thank my long-term collaborators, Dr. Julian Lee, Dr. Julian Baker, Dr. Sharon Nichols, Dr. Deborah Harrington, and my two research associates, Ashley Swan and Anna Marie Quinto. And I'd like to thank Brian Bruder from ISS Technology for the collaboration. And if you want to learn more about our research, there's a video, the link to our video presentation and audio presentation, and also have a whole collection of the paper published in our laboratory. And like, thank you all so much and for your attention. And before we go to the question and comment section, and I'd like to you spend a few seconds just check, you know, this the question, and so I will learn more about your background, and be very helpful for us to improve our research and improve my presentation.
Thank you so much, Dr. Huang. So as our attendees can see, we do have the poll question up on your screen now. So what we'd like to know is which fields describe your interest in TBI, and you can go ahead and select as many as apply to you. So the answer options are diagnosing TBI, treating TBI, animal research of TBI, human research of TBI-SD, social work or other supports to TBI. And it looks like we've had about 45% of our audience vote so far, but the answers are still streaming in, so I'm going to give people a few more seconds. Okay, and it looks like we've capped off right around two-thirds of our audience. So I'm going to go ahead and close this out and share those results. So as you can see, 51% of our respondents selected diagnosing TBI, 77% treating TBI, 5% animal research of TBI, 33% human research of TBI-SD, 26% social work or other support to TBI. So thank you to those respondents, and I'm going to give you the screen share one more time so we can keep your Q&A slide up there.
Thank you all for your attention and for participating in this web seminar. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer some of the questions from the audience.
Excellent. So we are going to hop into the questions right now. So for any of our attendees that joined us after the top of the hour, to submit your question or comment, please use the GoToWebinar control panel on the right-hand side of your screen. Just click the arrow next to the word questions. That will expand the dialog box, and you can then submit your question or comment there. So we'll get right into those. The first one, are these changes permanent, or can they be used to both diagnose an injury and track recovery?
Good question. And so we have follow-up in this patient going through this IS treatment. The recovery, the effect tend to be long-term, and even after 6 months of we finished the treatment, the effect is still there. And the reason we believe that the effect is long-term is associated with the mechanism. So unlike DCS or TACS, so for TACS, they can actually sending an arginine carbon to the brain, but there's no guarantee that kind of the frequency for the AC current will be in line with the endogenous or hidden oscillation intrinsic to the brain. For us, we have wide spectrum and a frequency from our pulses. We deliver at a repetition rate in a delta wave band. So we believe that's actually a more effective way to enhance or potentiate the slow wave, hopefully enhance the heating mechanism or cleaning mechanism in the brain. Because we try to bring up those heat generator, and that's what we believe the reason the effect tend to be long-term. And so the second part of the question is, can we use the slow wave as both a diagnostic tool and also for tracking and the treatment. Yes. And the first part of our my talk, we'll talk about, you know, we can measure generation of the delta wave, and that goes to the site of the injury. But, you know, and the, you know, as we figure out, the delta wave is not a bad thing. That's indication of ongoing brain repairment or ongoing healing process on the site of injury. So by performing a measurement in the before and after, you can track the change of slow wave as a result in this particular case through our ISS treatment. And overall, we see reduction of the delta wave when the subject finished the 6 weeks treatment with ISS. So yes, this slow wave can be used as an imaging marker for not only making the diagnosis, also tracking the changes for our particular and transcranial electrical simulation approach.
Thank you for that reply. The next question, also Ming-Chong, can you advance to your contact information slide real quick? Excellent, thank you. The next question, what is the current length of follow-up?
Right now, and with limited resources, we follow up our subject up to 6 months. So with exception one of them, the patient didn't finish the treatment, so that's basically, you know, marginal improvement in the and his symptoms pretty much stay the same. For the other five subjects, we have follow-up 6 months that show, you know, persistent improvement in the, at least the 6 months follow-up time window. We like to have a longer in follow-up time window, and that's part of the study will start January 1st. In that case, we can potentially follow up the patient in the 1 year time window.
Thank you for that reply. How long post injury were your MTBI patients? Do you hypothesize there is a particular time window after the initial injury during which IASIS is maximally effective?
Another good question. So, seeing our six subjects. We have actually more cases, and those patients actually, and some of our, many of them are veterans, and some are civilians. Those participants in our study are chronic TBI patients. They have a TBI way past the acute phase, which is 3 to 6 months. And the reason we pick those patients up is we don't want to confound our finding with potentially acute recovery that's happening in the acute phase. We know the brain is dynamic. When the brain is injured initially, the brain tries to do its job and to fix the damage. But in our study, we particularly target those patients with chronic TBI, so we can pretty much rule out the spontaneous recovery in the acute phase. And so, but that doesn't mean, you know, this, ISIS treatment cannot be applied by to the patient with acute TBI. We believe actually potentially that would be equally effective if you applied ISIS in patient with acute TBI. Basically speed up and the cleaning process and the recovery process that associate with the delta wave generation. But we need more data to confirm that. But we believe and the treatment can be applied to both acute and chronic. But your particular study, we purposely focus on the chronic MAR-TBI population to rule out the potential compound from the spontaneous recovery.
Thank you. Have you considered a control study with sham stimulation to confirm that the clinical responses can be attributed to a direct effect of your pulsed stimulation?
Yes, and that's exactly the design we'll have in our new study, was in the study of January 1st. In that case, we have different groups of patients. The patient was no TBI, and the patient will go through the actual ISS treatment. And the third group is the patient with TBI, but going through sham treatment. And I think the question behind that question is, how do we handle and the potential placebo effect? And so that question can be addressed by our study, which is started January 1st. And we don't believe, you know, the finding from a pilot study is due to placebo effect, typically, you know, because one of the measurement we have is improvement of sleep. That tend to be quite, you know, objective. And also the slow wave measurement as imaging marker is hard to, you know, to have, you know, and to manipulate slow wave generation. But to completely rule out, you know, the potential placebo compound, in our new design, and we start January 1st. We have the three groups, particularly targeting using the sham control group and try to rule out the placebo effect.
Thank you for that reply. How long after the TBI occurred did the majority of interventions take place? Could there be benefits for veterans with blast injuries over 1 year benefit?
Yes. In our study, I don't have that one in front of me. And some of the, you know, and the patient go through our pilot study have the TBI years ago. And they still have ongoing symptoms. And so they still have ongoing slow wave in the brain. So in that regard, you know, the treatment we have, you know, study and our, I mentioned, you know, in my answer for the previous question, and to the, you know, and the, in the chronic phase. So that could be, you know, many years, in the chronic phase of MAR TBI. And so that's the nature of the subject, you know, pilot study.
Thank you. Have you considered a control, oh, I'm sorry, we already did that one. The effectiveness of your treatment in reducing symptom report is unusually high and suggests other factors like placebo effect might be contributing to supposed symptom reduction. Your treatment and evaluation methods have potential to generate a large placebo effect. Do you plan to include a placebo control condition so that consumers of your research can determine how much of the symptom improvement is due to the treatment versus placebo effect? And I believe you may have touched on this a bit earlier.
Oh, yes. And I touched, you know, this question earlier, but let me repeat. Yes, we plan to have three groups in our new study with sham group and go through the sham treatment for 6 weeks. Oh, by the way, by the end of this 6 weeks, we can open the label and see, you know, if the patient in the sham group, we offer them the real treatment, you know. So, but in the new study, we plan to have a sham group and the real treatment group, another group with no TBI, and, you know, so we have basically three groups of subjects that can fully address the concern of placebo effect. We don't believe the symptom improvement, and you know, as that we see in the pilot study, you know, as due to placebo effect, we cannot 100% rule out. As I mentioned, that if some of the symptoms are associated with sleep quality, if one of the patients before the treatment, he can only sleep for a long period of time, only 3 hours a day. That by themselves can cause a huge amount of, you know, and difficulties, you know, and affect his daily function. After a few sessions of treatment, before one of the treatments start, we ask him, oh yeah, last night, I sleep 6.5 hours. And that's actually a drastic improvement in his sleep quality. So that pattern stayed the same and during the entire treatment and also, you know, 6 months after the treatment. So we don't believe, you know, the placebo effect can explain that kind of finding. Also, you know, and for the guy with heavy usage of the tobacco, he tried all the different methods to quit tobacco, all failed. Until, you know, go through the study, and, you know, 6 months after the treatment, still tobacco free. So, and we haven't heard that example, you know, and the placebo effect can give such a long-term benefit. But to fully address the placebo effect, we need a sham group, and that's what we plan to do, and starting that study early next month.
Thank you. We have about 3 pending questions, but we are at the top of the hour. Dr. Huang, are you able to stay on for a few minutes so we can capture
yes.
these in the recording? Excellent. Thank you. For any of our attendees, if you do need to drop off when you exit the session, please wait just a moment while the feedback survey populates on your screen. It's just a few questions, but we do look at your responses closely, and it does help us improve. So thank you. This is a 3-part question. Are any more, so we'll take it one at a time. Are any more participants being recruited?
Yes. We have a few more in the patient after we submit our paper, and which was published this year. And the other few patients also show, you know, and the improvement in both the ambient slow wave and also in the reduction of symptoms. We're going to have funding. I really thank the VA support us, you know, and with large number of subjects in the starting next year. We plan to open up our recruitment drastically for recruiting, you know, our veterans, you know, through our new research, go through ISS treatment, SHAM treatment, and veteran healthy controls.
Thank you. And the second one, how much is follow-up? Is it, you may have already touched on this one. How much is follow-up? Is it permanent or not?
So what we can say based upon the follow-up data we have is a 6 months follow-up and the effects persist. Whether it can last beyond the time window, we don't have data. Again, I mentioned in our new study, we plan to potentially increase our follow-up window to 1 year. We have more data, but right now it appears to be, and the effect is not short-term. At least it can last for 6 months.
Thank you. And our final question, can you please give an interval for your cases, a time interval for your cases?
Time interval for our cases, I think there's that might mean the time window between the injury and the treatment. And as I mentioned, they're in the chronic phase, and they all pass way beyond the 6 month acute, subacute phase, way in the chronic time window. And the time window might also means the treatment, and the treatment particularly each section lasts about 30 minutes, and we perform 2 treatments per week, and totally 12 sessions of treatment across 6-week time window. But that's the different time windows, and I hope that answers your question.
Thank you so much. Before we wrap up, I'd like to give you the opportunity to make any concluding comments that you'd like to.
I'd really, you know, like to thank Dr. DePalma for giving us this excellent opportunity and to share our research with the wider VA audience and also thank the VA support, you know, and for the last many years to our laboratory for MEG research on RTB and PTSD in this case, for the transcranial electric stimulation. I'd like to thank Molly for coordinating this web seminar and for technical support. Thank everybody for participating in this web seminar. Thank you.
Thank you so very much. And Ralph, did you want to wrap up with anything?
Yes, we'd like to thank you very much for this presentation, and we're looking forward with great anticipation to your prospective placebo-controlled study. Thank you, Mick Chong.
Thank you, Ralph.